young heart stuck in a 9-to-5 world. She holds me tight, she says, well, there must be more than this. Yeah, I heard it, I seen it, I smell it now. Well, I feel it, it's like New York. People that she's with, you know, they're all so pretty. And she's not coming home, I guess there's too much to see. You know, once you get out, it becomes a disease. It's like
it is 6:30. Coming up next, we've got Free Culture Radio with Doug McVeigh.
Coming to you from the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is an examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the ineluctable, indelible, and indispensable influence of drugs on society. Free Culture Radio neither promotes the use of any drugs nor condemns people for being involved in drugs. To the extent that drug use presents problems for individuals or society, those problems are made worse and more intractable when drug users are treated as others and ignored, stigmatized, and even brutalized. Maya Solovitz is an award-winning author and journalist who covers addiction and neuroscience. Her latest book, the New York Times bestseller, Unbroken Brain, A Revolutionary New Way of Understanding Addiction, uses her own story of recovery from heroin and cocaine addiction to explore how reframing addiction as a learning disorder can transform prevention, treatment, and policy. It was first published by St. Martin's Books in April of 2016, and it is now being released in paperback. And I have Maya on the phone with me right now. Maya, it is such a pleasure to be talking with you. How are you today?
I am good, and thanks so much for having me back. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it is absolutely my pleasure. I mean, your story is moving. This whole topic is fascinating, and people simply, there's such a lack of understanding. Let me start first of all with just the title. Why Unbroken Brain?
Okay, there's two reasons. One is the official reason, and one is the more hidden reason. The official reason is that the brain of people with addiction is not actually broken. We have this idea that addiction causes brain damage and that it creates what is always a chronic, relapsing, progressive disorder. And that's actually not true in many cases. Progressive seems never to be true because the data shows that you are equally likely to stop using at any given time. So if it were progressive, it should be less and less likely that you would quit as you get older, but that does not turn out to be the case. Chronic, it certainly is for many people, but also many people do outgrow it without even attending a self-help group or any kind of formal treatment whatsoever. So it's complex and varied.
Because people now, we have taken to understanding of addiction as a brain disease rather than being some kind of moral failing or a sign of evil.
I realize I just didn't finish that explanation there. So it is unbroken brain because what basically happens during addiction is you fall in love with a drug rather than a person. And so what that means is that you've learned something in a very deep and intense and difficult to unlearn kind of way. Just like when you fall in love with somebody, you get all these cues about them, your stress system gets wired to them, you get all these cravings for them. It's the same system being co-opted. But falling in love does not break your brain, and neither does addiction, although certainly if you take certain drugs in certain combinations at certain doses, it can do severe harm.
Well, and in fact, you can. There are folks who have described love itself as a disease. So
right, which I think is like, and I mean, it's very interesting because in the I guess it's the early 80s or late 70s, Stanton Peale wrote a book called Love and Addiction, and it was his idea to use the sort of metaphor of love because we didn't know about the neuroscience at that point. But it was his idea to use that, and he was hoping to depathologize addiction. But instead, he wound up pathologizing love, and we got the whole codependence movement, which was not his happiest moment at all.
Oh,
and I just want to add, the secret reason that it's Unbroken Brain is because of the Grateful Dead song, Unbroken Chain.
One of the stories you tell in the book, I mean, you know, obviously people should just get the book so they can read this because there are, it's brilliant reporting, it's an analysis, your analysis is just, you know, beyond words, and the personal story, which is fascinating, and it's not an oh, woe is me. I mean, you know, one of the things about drugs that people lose track of is they're fun.
I mean, that's why we do them.
Yeah.
They're fun.
Well, no, and I mean, I think that's actually, it's a really important point because while, you know, people think that drug addiction is this kind of inexplicable thing where you become a zombie sort of pulled by strings of something. And in fact, when people start using, they certainly do so for quite rational reasons, like they want to feel better, they want to have fun, they want to have a good time. When you get to the later stages of addiction, you certainly do end up having this feeling of, I'm doing something that I really don't want to be doing and I cannot stop. But the vast majority of people who use drugs don't ever become addicted. And it's important to realize that, like, for them, you know, it's just fun. And, you know, while obviously we want to do everything we can to reduce harm and make sure that people are not harming themselves or others while having fun, the emphasis on drugs and their negative effects often makes it very hard for people to understand what's actually going on.
It's such a complicated thing. I mean, language itself. I mean, we used to, you know, addicts and dismiss people as addicts, and then it's like, oh, but they're people. They're just sick. They have a disease, and then it's a no. We'll call it a disorder. It's a substance abuse disorder, and oh no, substance use disorder, because we don't want to stigmatize people by saying that they're abusing something. So are they that dependent, psychological? You're okay with the word addict, right?
Well, I am okay with the word addict. I prefer to use person with addiction because I believe that if we're going to do person with schizophrenia and person with depression, we should afford people with addiction the same respect. It is clunky, but as a writer, I'm going to accept that because I want people to have equal respect for people with addiction. The thing that I really can't stand is using dependent instead of addiction, because dependence and addiction are absolutely not the same thing. Dependence is a normal physiological response that happens within a few weeks of taking certain drugs. And these might be antidepressants, these might be high blood pressure medication, these might be medications used to treat addiction, these might be medications used to treat pain. But if they are working for their intended purpose, and you are dependent on them, and you are not cut off from your supply because of some dumb healthcare system problem, that is not an issue. We're all dependent on food and water and air. We're all dependent on each other. So dependence itself is just not a bad thing. And if you define addiction as dependence, you end up defining Prozac as causing addiction, but cocaine does not, because cocaine doesn't cause physical withdrawal symptoms where you get sick and shake. You just get irritable and annoying. So it's really important to make that distinction, because if you think that addiction is dependent, you will see all pain patients who take opioids as being addicted, and you will also see people who are on methadone or Suboxone as being addicted, even though what they actually have when the drugs are appropriately titrated is simply physical dependence. Addiction is compulsive behavior despite negative consequences. Physical dependence is just needing something to function. One of them is automatically a problem, because compulsive behavior despite negative consequences means that your life isn't working very well. Dependence just means you need something, and frankly, like I said, we all need something.
And in terms of medication, I mean, as you were saying, heart medication, heck, insulin, you can be dependent on these things, because if you don't take them, you'll die.
Exactly. And so the idea, you know, we have this idea that, like, oh, physical dependence is like the reason that, you know, people don't stop taking opioids. If that were true, you could basically lock somebody in a closet for a couple of weeks and they'd be cured. And as we all know, that does not work. The problem in addiction is not the physical symptoms. You know, I mean, it is awful to experience withdrawal. It's awful physically. But it's not physically more awful than the vast majority of diseases that put people in hospitals. It's severely unpleasant, but what's really, really awful about the experience of taking heroin or other opioids is this feeling that you will never have any safety, comfort, relief, joy again in your life. That's what makes the misery and the insomnia and the anxiety around that. It's not the puking and the shaking and all that kind of thing. I mean, that's not fun, but it's not torture, whereas the mental symptoms can be torturous. So what's interesting is when the word dependence was used to be synonymous with addiction, you had this silly thing of like, well, there's physical dependence and there's psychological dependence, and psychological dependence is not as bad. But actually, cocaine causes pretty much only psychological dependence, and I don't think anybody's going to argue that crack is not addictive anymore. So it's really important to recognize that the psychological matters a lot, and that also this distinction between physical and psychological dependence is kind of artificial, since presumably we presume that the brain has some kind of physical function.
It's I remember back when back working at Normal, the psychological addiction, that was one of the that we used to dismiss that as like, well, you know, people could, you know, psychologically addicted to soap operas and you know, the binge watching
and
TV.
That's, you know, yeah, that's an important thing. See, marijuana can certainly cause addiction in the classic sense of compulsive behavior despite negative consequences. The thing with marijuana is that, again, the vast majority of people never become addicted, and the people who do become addicted have fewer negative consequences than they would if they were addicted to, say, cocaine or heroin. In fact, I've never met a family or a loved one of a person with addiction who wouldn't prefer that they have a marijuana addiction compared to an alcohol addiction or certainly an opioid addiction, because the negative consequences of those two addictions are frequently death, whereas with marijuana, it's not going to kill you.
And I suppose people are now thinking, well, better that they would not have anything at all. It's like, I suppose in a perfect world, that's true. But, you know, again, going back to the point of why people do these things, people are doing drugs because they're fun. So if they're going to have fun in a less dangerous way?
Well, right. But also, like, by the time you get addicted, it really isn't fun anymore. And that's really important to understand, because a lot of times people think, oh, like, addicted people are just really selfish and they put their fun in front of everything else and they rob and steal and lie just so they can have fun. That's not what's going on. When you are actually addicted, you feel that the drug is necessary to your psychological survival. And you feel that it's just as necessary as, like, a mother feels about, you know, the safety of her child, or a lover feels about being able to be with his beloved. So it's really important to understand that this is generally not a thing where people are just like, oh, gee, let me have a ton of fun and, like, destroy my kid's life. Like, that's not what's going on here. When somebody's addicted, they are having negative consequences, and it is not fun anymore. And when someone is addicted, it's really important that negative consequences if you don't have negative consequences, it's not an addiction. So that's why a soap opera addiction rarely actually rises to the level of addiction. Although if you are watching soap operas to the point where you are abandoning your children, then I would say that that probably qualifies as an addiction.
You are listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. My guest on this edition of Free Culture Radio is Maya Solovitz, an award-winning journalist and author of the New York Times best-selling book, Unbroken Brain, A Revolutionary New Way of Understanding Addiction. We've been really serious for quite a bit, and now I'd like to switch gears for a moment because there's a story you tell at the beginning about the first time you did cocaine, and just to give our listeners a taste of why they need to buy your book, aside from the analysis and the information, and there's a reason it's a New York Times bestseller. But how did you first do cocaine, Maya?
Okay, so this is a kind of funny story. So I had this boyfriend who was involved with selling drugs to the Grateful Dead, and I was a huge, massive Deadhead. I was about 17. And we ended up bringing some coke to Jerry. So at this point, the only prior time to that I did cocaine was like an hour earlier with the lighting director. That was really like, it didn't sort of make much of an impression. But suddenly here I am, I'm like sitting on Jerry Garcia's bed, and he's offering me a line, and oh yeah, I'm going to say yes to that. And that just suddenly I felt as though I was sort of in on the secret of the universe, and I'm sitting there with Jerry and we're talking about the history of the name Maya and how it means illusion in Buddhism and whether the real world is an illusion or not. And it's just like the kind of tricky conversation that you would love to have with Jerry Garcia. And I just, I was certainly on top of the world, and that's a very hard first experience to beat.
I have friends who would listen, who have heard you say that just now, and are alternating between "Wow, that's so cool" and "I'm so jealous." Hell, I'm jealous.
Sad about it retrospectively is like, a guy his age should not be sitting around doing cocaine with 17-year-old girls, but whatever. And I have to say also that, nothing other than that happened, sadly for me.
Well, you were young. And, of course, we don't do that kind of thing anymore. It's important to add for the benefit of the listeners and any law enforcement.
Well, exactly. And I mean, the reality is that, if I had a 17-year-old, I would be utterly horrified by the whole scenario.
Well, that's a good segue. I mean, the experience, the experience you had that first one wasn't just about the drug, obviously, because there you are, it's Jerry Garcia, for heaven's sake, and you're having this great conversation. It's the drug, it's the mindset, it's the setting. The brilliant Norman Zinberg, he wasn't the first, of course, but his book years ago, Drug, Set, and Setting. Talk to the listeners about this.
Absolutely. So it was actually Timothy Leary who came up with the concept of set and setting, much as I don't like to credit him. But he did, and then Zinberg picked it up and wrote his brilliant analysis. And so the idea here is that you can't really talk about what effects a drug has independent of what setting the person is taking it in. So a setting is like your cultural beliefs about the drug, your physical environment, your whole, everything around you, the social environment, people around you, and the set is really sort of your internal stuff. What your own thoughts are about it and what, how you are feeling, like if you're starting out in a bad mood or not, that kind of thing. So if, and all drugs, people just used to think that only psychedelics were affected by set and setting, but even like alcohol is affected by set and setting. So, for example, if you drink a different kind of drink than you usually drink in a different setting than you usually are in, you can actually get more drunk. Also, this applies to opioids, which means that if you shoot up in a new setting, especially if you're in some kind of different mind space, like maybe really stressed or something like that, you might actually overdose on a dose that you usually tolerate. And this has actually been demonstrated in mice, where actually 50% of them put in a new cage given the same dose that they were tolerant to actually died. So it's really important to know about this in terms of opioid harm reduction, because most people typically shoot up in the same several places, so this doesn't often apply. But sometimes it can.
You are the best journalist working on drug issues in the country today, and I say that as one of the other journalists working on drug issues in this country. So, but we've got the new administration, and everybody that they're appointing is talking about drug war. The marijuana industry folks have been you know, saying, oh, everything's going to be okay, and they're not really going to crack down on us, and. Which on the one hand, well, that's kind of wishful thinking. On the other hand, it's like, yes, you just go ahead and separate yourselves from the rest of drug policy reform, folks. You've got nothing to worry about because your business may continue past the next 4 years. But I see
it slightly differently. I think that the marijuana industry, whatever their, you know, pros and cons may be, I think what they're seeing is the fact that marijuana is so mainstream now that it's really hard to stir up a moral panic about it. When Sessions says things that used to terrify people, like, think about the children, people laugh now. You know, it's certainly, if somebody was proposing legalizing heroin and having Philip Morris heroin at the moment, that wouldn't go over very well. But and that's not to say anything about the merits of heroin prescription, which actually works quite well. But the point here is that so many people have used marijuana. So many people have become disillusioned by the fact that marijuana is demonstrably less harmful than some of these other substances, and that the government has lied to them about it. So I don't think, you know, I mean, I suppose they could, you know, send in, you know, the National Guard or something, but it seems as though without the support of the media is no longer doing marijuana hysteria the way it used to do. Without the support of the media, without the support of the public, it is going to be very, very difficult for them to get any traction with that. Now, I could be wrong, and they could, you know, stir up people. But, I mean, there was I think this was in Seattle. There was a, you know, one of these demonstrations where, like, pro- and anti-Trump people were, you know, counter-demonstrating. And somebody in the crowd, they offered each other a joint, and they all, like, smoked together. And I thought, yeah, you know? Like, that is not something that you can imagine in a world where a marijuana crackdown is going to be successful.
This is true. They are, on the other hand, doing a lot of demonizing around opiates and yes. And heroin, and not just the illegals, but I mean, Sessions talking about cracking down and, you know, cutting down on these prescriptions generally. I mean,
We certainly had a tremendous crackdown on prescriptions already, so much so that a lot of people in chronic pain who do actually benefit from opioids are suffering. So that's an important thing to say. The insane thing about the crackdown that we've had on prescription opioids is that every time you shot the pill mill, you have a list of everybody who has received pills from that pill mill, because they cannot get their prescription without their real name, because ID is required. So you have a list of everyone. Now, some of these people will be dealers, but the vast majority of them will be either people in pain who actually need pain care, or people with addiction, or people with addiction and pain. If you just cut all of those people off, the people with addiction are going to end up going to street drugs, and they already know how to get them, since they tend to previously be people who had contact with recreational drug using scenes. And so they will go and buy heroin, and now they are at risk from fentanyl, which, you know, we have seen overdoses continue to increase as the prescription opioid supply has been cut. So it's just so dumb not to instantly offer either, you know, pain treatment for the pain patients or addiction treatment for the addiction patients when we arrest these people. It's just completely nuts, because what it does is it creates new heroin markets in places where they didn't previously exist. And once that market is created, I don't think anybody has ever successfully eradicated a heroin market from a city entirely. It just moves somewhere else within the city.
For the benefit of the listeners, tell them how to keep up with the work you're doing. And if you have any closing thoughts you'd like to share.
Sure. So you can follow me on Twitter. It's at MayaSZ, which is M-A-I-A, S like Sam, Z like Zebra. And MayaSZ.com will also bring you to an enormous collection of my writing at this point, which a friend of mine is posting for me, which is making me very happy. So you can find out, because I freelance for many different places, the best way to keep up would be Twitter generally, or the website. And, you know, it's really been a fascinating experience to see, you know, I've been thinking about this stuff about addiction for a really long time now, and to see that people are finally, you know, it's becoming a more mainstream view, when it used to be the case that if you said something like, legalize marijuana, decriminalize drug possession, you'd be seen as like some wild-haired radical. And now people are really beginning to accept concepts like harm reduction, and to really recognize that compassion is what's needed. So it's been really wild to see.
And you resisted the temptation to add what a long, strange trip it's been.
Absolutely, yes. That is a good tagline. It certainly has been a long, strange trip. Music. Music also is actually the best drug.
Now you're making me think of my first Dead show.
it is kind of wild to think back on that. One of the things that I've always sort of been horrified by in addiction treatment is that they try to, like, take away your music and take away, you know, clothes that you might identify with, and take away things that they just see as, you know, harmful, useless, drug-associated things that maybe really things you love that aren't about drugs. And so I always feel like it's really important to allow people to have access to whatever helps them, because when you're giving up drugs, it is really hard to get pleasure, because physiologically you are, you know, your brain circuits are getting themselves back in order. And so I feel like more music, more sugar, you know, more connection, more exercise, like more love, anything that people can actually have that keeps them away from the stuff that has been harming them is, in my view, helpful. Because if you try to make recovery out to be this pleasureless slog where all it's about is like giving up this and giving up that and, you know, being healthy all the time, no, like recovery is really fun. And if you are doing it right, you will feel way better than you do when you are addicted.
Well, that's it for this edition of Free Culture Radio. My guest was the journalist Maya Solovitz, author of the New York Times bestseller Unbroken Brain, A Revolutionary New Way of Understanding Addiction. Many thanks to our engineer for making me sound so good. And thanks especially to you, dear listener, for your support. You make it all worth it. Free Culture Radio has a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/KBOO Free Culture Radio. Please give it a like. You can find links there to past shows, announcements about upcoming programs and events, and other stuff like news items that may be of interest. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. I'm Doug McVeigh. Good night.
It's 6:58. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Up next is Hard Knock Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Finance Committee is the third Thursday of each month at 5 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the 25th Annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Music and Food Festival, June 23rd through June 25th at Lil's Albina Park in Portland. The Good in the Hood Music and Food Festival is the largest multicultural festival in the Pacific Northwest. This three-day music festival opens up with a community parade that travels through Northeast Portland and ends at Lil's Albina Park. The parade starts at 11 a.m. from King Elementary School on Saturday, June 24th, and ends at Lil's Albina Park, where there will be music, food, and resources while connecting people with experiences that strengthen unity in community. Again, that's the 25th Annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Music and Food Festival, June 23rd through June 25th at Lil's Albina Park at North Flint Street and Russell Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies.